compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay, and away we go. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio, and you are invited to participate by calling me at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. I hope you're enjoying your Father Rocky Lenten lesson videos that are coming to your email each morning during Lent, starting on Ash Wednesday. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, just go to relevantradio.com/Lent. You can sign up. There's still time. They're great. And Father Rocky spends about 2 minutes in each of these presentations on video walking you through different aspects of the Mass. And I think you'll find them very, very agreeable, very interesting. That's relevantradio.com/Lent. Let's go to Mike now in the Quad Cities, Illinois area. Good morning, Mike.
Morning, Patrick. How are you doing today?
I am loving life. Thank you.
I feel you that much. Hey, so this is kind of a controversial thing, and it's about the abortion thing you touched on a few moments ago. Now, when I say what I have to say here, don't take this as sort of, I don't know how else to put it, so I'm just going to kind of ask it here.
Okay.
What is your stance between religion and science, medicinal science?
What is my stance? I mean, like, how do I approach them?
How do you factor between the two? Like, what is something that is necessary between medical, like, emergency versus something that you feel is just God-willed?
Okay. Well, I approach science with a lot of gratitude because science is our way of learning about the physical realities around us, and that's part of God's revelation, is the physical realm. So I'm very grateful to science and scientists, and I listen, and I seek to follow it. With regard to revealed truth that comes to us outside of physical things, so divine revelation in the Bible, for example, or Jesus, I accept that as well. I seek to follow God's revelation to us, both in the physical as well as in the spiritual.
Okay, awesome. And I actually really humbly appreciate that answer. Not many people differentiate between the line of that. So my second question to follow up what I have to say is have you ever heard of Eisenmenger syndrome?
I don't know that I have. What is it?
Okay, so Eisenmenger syndrome is essentially an increased blood pressure in the right, I think the left side of the heart, that's the part of the heart that has blue blood. And it causes very, very serious, serious complications during pregnancy. And my point here is I had a family member who passed away with complications of a uterine. I can't think of the uterine issue she had right off the top of my head.
She was pregnant.
And Eisenmenger syndrome. And the doctor she had, who was also Catholic, advised her to abort because of a medical health care issue. As a matter of fact, she died because she refused to do so.
God bless her.
Basically,
she made the right
decision. Yes and no. She died because of an issue that could have saved her life. I mean,
yeah, but killing another person, especially an innocent person, is never the solution. You can never do something evil to achieve a good goal. Now, I grant you, and may she rest in peace, I'm sorry for your loss, but it would have been the wrong decision for her to kill the innocent life in order to save her own life. She did the heroic thing. She did the right thing.
I can't come to terms with that because, well, yes, that fetus was not evil. You know, they had done nothing wrong, and killing it would have been wrong, so to speak. But to lose her life over something that she could have lived for screams wrong to me. I mean, what?
You know, Jesus said, "No greater love has any man than to lay down his life for a friend." So Jesus extolled what she did as a heroic thing. Jesus praised it. I'm sure that Jesus would not praise it if she said, "Well, my life is more important to me than this unborn innocent child. Therefore, I'm going to kill the child in order to save my own life. That's the opposite of what Jesus was extolling.
And I understand that. But in doing so, she also sacrificed her life and left behind two other children who needed her very, very much.
Right. But what is the option? I mean, on the one hand, you're appealing to how these children need her very, very much. But at the same time, you're advocating that she should have killed one of them? I don't understand that logic.
No, I'm not advocating that she should have. I'm advocating for the fact that it is health care.
No.
Literally, in the actual medicinal and definition sense, it is health care.
No, it's not. It's not health care to kill an innocent person. It's just not. And by the way, Mike, FYI, and you seem like a great guy, Mike. I'm not trying to get in a quarrel with you, but this is a really clear issue. You can never do something evil to achieve a good end. And it's always evil to intentionally take the life of an innocent human being. And that those are innocent human beings in the womb. We can call them fetuses because that's what the clinical term is for that stage of development. But they're still human beings. They're as much a human being as you and I are. And they have a right to life just like you and I do. And it's never, ever right to intentionally take the life of an innocent human being. So,
I'm not saying it is. Now, Before we get further on this,
well, then what are you saying, Mike? I want to make sure I know what you're saying because maybe I don't. Maybe I've missed the point you're making. If you're not saying that, let me frame it, if I may. If you're not saying that it's okay to take the life of an innocent human being, then what are you saying?
What I'm saying is there are how many different instances in the Bible itself that God has willed someone to kill another, like Cain and Abel, for example.
Mike, God punished Cain for killing Abel. What Abel did was wrong. He murdered his brother and God punished him for it. He didn't will him to kill his brother. No. Now there are other instances where you could point to God said, go into that city and destroy it. I mean, there are other legitimate examples, but Cain and Abel is not one of them.
You're right. That was probably a misrepresentation there. But my point is that there are other instances in the Bible where it's happened under God-willed circumstances. Now, I'm not trying to ream you. I'm only doing this as sort of more of an informative sense in myself to kind of see where other people stand on this issue here.
I'm not reamable, by the way, Mike. So no worries on that score. But what is it that makes you think
that this is... I don't mean to disrespect. You're very intelligent, and I appreciate you.
Well, thank you. It's kind
of
you.
But I'm sorry.
I guess what I'd like to do is share with you from a medical professional perspective, and I'm not one. I assume you're probably not a doctor also, but I know...
No, but I've practiced.
You practice medicine?
Yes.
Okay, but not as a physician. I'm just trying to get clarity.
Yeah, go ahead. No, I'm actually still in training.
Okay.
So that's kind of where I'm questioning but seeking clarity between the line of religious practice and medicinal practice.
Okay. I hear you. I understand where you're coming from. Let me share with you a brief commentary on this topic by a physician by the name of Anthony Levitino. He'll give a little bit of his credentials in a moment, but he's talking directly about the question of, is it ever medically necessary to abort the baby to save the life of the mother, which is really the heart of what you and I are talking about, right?
So, exactly, yes, 100%.
Okay, so he'll tell you, you know, he performed, you know, 10,000 deliveries. He also was an abortion doctor for many years, OBGYN. He'll tell you all that, but listen to what he had to say when he was asked the same question, okay? I think you'll find it very interesting. So here's Dr. Anthony Levitino, and I'll come back to you, Mike, when he's done talking.
We hear all the time how abortion, including especially late-term abortion, is necessary to save women's lives. Nothing could be further from the truth. I spent 9 years working at a tertiary medical center. I mean, there are only certain hospitals in the country that are designated to take care of the really, really high-risk pregnancies. You don't want to duplicate the effort. It's expensive. So these hospitals get referrals from the surrounding area. And Albany Medical Center in Albany, New York, where I worked, was one of them. I was faculty at the hospital for 9 years. And I saw hundreds of cases of really severe pregnancy complications, cancers, heart disease, intractable diabetes, out of control, toxemia of pregnancy, out of control. And I saved, in those 9 years, I saved hundreds of women from life-threatening pregnancies. And I did that by delivering them, by ending their pregnancy by delivery, either induction of labor or cesarean section.
Delivering the baby.
Delivering the baby. And I always tell people, in all of those years, the number of babies that I had to, that I was obligated to deliberately kill in the process, was zero, none. And I'll give you an example. The key point about late-term abortion that so many people miss is that it takes days to prepare the cervix. This is not a natural situation by any stretch. If you're going to dilate a cervix sufficiently, that starts off essentially as a pinpoint, large enough to dismember or tear apart a baby this big, that cervix has to be dilated, and that can take anywhere from 24 to 72 hours. And especially when you're talking about later term pregnancies. Most life-threatening situations, the vast, vast majority of life-threatening situations in pregnancy are not going to arise until 24, 25, 26 weeks of pregnancy and higher. And when you're talking about that, you're talking about abortion procedures that take 2 and 3 days to prepare the cervix. And I'll give you a classic example. This is a real case. A lady came to the hospital at 27 weeks of pregnancy with severe toxemia. Her blood pressure, you know, a normal blood pressure is about 120 over 80. Her blood pressure was 220 over 160. Okay, this lady would literally be minutes or hours away from a stroke. What do you do in a situation like that? We stabilized her, brought her back, did a cesarean section, had her delivered within an hour of arriving at the hospital. She and her baby did just fine.
Okay. Now, thank you, Cyrus. I appreciate that. I hope we didn't lose our caller. I don't see him.
He's back on two.
Oh, back on two. Great. Okay, thank you. Mike, I thought I had lost you. So thank you.
Yeah, I thought I lost you guys too. Nope.
So I just wanted, that's food for thought. What do you think about his testimony on that?
No, I absolutely agree with him. In no way, shape, or form do I agree with late-term abortion in any way, period. My question was actually not about late-term. It was strictly early-term. My point is that she suffered that entire pregnancy up until birth to lose both herself and the child. That was my point. In no way, shape, or form do I ever agree with late-term abortion. That is strictly murder. There's no other way to put that. So in that regard, I totally 100% agree with Levitino. And it's funny because I've actually heard that before. So it was actually a good refresher to listen to it once again.
Where do you draw the line? This is a very interesting point you're making here. If it's murder in late-term abortion, where do you draw the line before which it's not murder? And why is it not murder before that point, but it is murder after that point?
See, this is where it gets to be the controversial part. Now, I'm a man, a purveyor of knowledge, so to speak. I like to seek information, knowledge from every facet available to me in any way, shape, or form. Okay. So this is not necessarily my view. Okay. So this is another one. So sorry, I'm a little stuck here at the moment. So this is a hard one to ask because this doesn't necessarily reflect how I feel. As a matter of fact, this whole conversation doesn't reflect how I feel, more so as I'm just garnering to seek information. So
fair enough.
Do you know at what stage the child becomes sentient?
Well, sentient can mean a few different things. Able to feel pain.
I don't mean sentient in the sentient. I mean sentient in the form of brain development, consciousness.
Very early. Well, consciousness, it's hard to say. I don't know if there's a way. I mean, they could determine when are brain waves detectable, when is a brain sufficiently formed to be detectable, things like that. I mean, if that's what you're referring to, I know that it's early in the process of gestation.
Yeah, it's early, but it's not as early as 6 weeks, which is...
Well, here's my question, because we could discuss the details of medical science, and I'm not a medically trained person, so I don't have that knowledge, but I'd rather than talk about what's not your point of view, I'd like to talk about what your point of view actually is. And
okay,
that I find the more intriguing.
My issue here is a lot of people don't see it as... I'm a debater. I'm somebody who just likes to seek knowledge. So, like I said, this isn't my point of view. It's something that I'm just asking.
Yeah.
And you seem like the great kind of person to ask.
Well, thank you. I think I would answer that question, which you were just presenting, like, well, what is that before our instruments are capable of detecting brainwaves, as an example? There may be other criteria that you would apply, but if before a certain number of weeks we can't detect that, because in the zygote phase, or even just down to the single cell phase at the moment of fertilization, my answer is that that is what a human being looks like at that stage of development. So at the moment of fertilization, when the sperm and the egg unite, that's what a human being looks like at that stage of development. And then you just push the time out further and further. At 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 5 weeks, 20 weeks, this is what a human being looks like. Now, sentience is one metric to measure. It's certainly not the only one. And also, I would argue that it's not a criterion for determining whether or not that's a human life. It's a criterion for determining what phase of development is that human life at. That's valid. But it doesn't get to the heart of whether or not that's a human being. Because if it's not a human being before X number of weeks where the brain waves are detectable, then what is it? What is that? And my view, to be consistent, and I'll throw it back to you, Mike, but my view is that from the moment of conception, the very first moment, that is a human being, an innocent human being who has a right to life through all stages of development. So that's where I come from this, you know, that's the angle that I'm coming at this from. And I'll give you the last word. I do have to take a break in a moment, but I'll let you
give me any
concluding thoughts.
And I really appreciate you going through this with me, because, you know, like I'm not trying to cause issues. You know, I'm just, this was brought up in class. Mm-hmm. And it was just something that I wanted to see what you had to say, because the issue and point and factor is, there's a certain stage in which basically I'll say 50% of the class stated that it wasn't a human being up until a certain point of brain development. And the other class stated it was. Now they're garnering, or their information that they spoke is that before it becomes a human being, it's technically, and by all medical definitions, it does ring correct with the term. And I don't like saying it like this, but they deemed it a parasite. First, so because it can't survive without a host. I mean, you remove the fetus, and I'm only using that in clinical term, it can't survive. Now, after a certain point in time, you let the child develop long enough, even at premature, it can survive, albeit with medical technology, but it can still survive. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where it came up to this, is it you know, that's a really weird thing to... It's kind of gross to say.
Right. But here's something that should be part of that conversation. And I'll have to leave in just a minute. Nonetheless, you could extend that metaphor of parasite and host to a newborn baby. The newborn baby, even though he's outside of his mother's body, he's dependent upon her for his very life. And he can't survive without her. Now, it's true, of course, that somebody else could take that baby and feed him. But the fact is, he's still as much of a parasite, quote unquote, if we want to use that ugly terminology, outside of the womb as he is inside the womb. He's still dependent for everything upon another person, and typically it would be the mother. So I don't think, it's not that I don't think. I know that the parasite argument, although it might seem superficially persuasive, it's not really persuasive at all, because it doesn't change the fact that you're still dealing with a human being, whether outside of the womb or inside the womb. This has been a really good conversation, Mike. Really good. I'm glad you called. I hope you'll call me again. I'd love to talk to you again.
Yeah, I really enjoyed talking to you. This was the first time, and as a matter of fact, real quick, I actually only recently found your show just this week. So I'm glad you had the chance to talk to me, and speaking to you was a wonderful pleasure, and I'm humbled and blessed at the same time.
Thank you, Mike. I feel the same. I'll talk to you again soon. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Chances are you either have some Lando Lakes butter in your refrigerator or you've had Lando Lakes butter before. I saw this yesterday. I couldn't believe it. But man, did this guy nail it. Wilfred Riley, he shows a picture of the Lando Lakes box of butter. You say, what are you talking about butter for? Well, just stick with me. So the original packaging shows a beautiful Indian maiden with long braids and a feather, and she, you know, she's quite pretty, and she's, her face is in the middle of the O in the Lando Lakes brand name. Well, they've redone the packaging because of cultural sensitivities and people being outraged by cultural appropriation, etc. So they've repackaged it, and the packaging, she's gone now, but it's still there. The scenery is there, and the Lando Lakes is there. So the land is there. She's gone. And somebody pointed out on Twitter, they literally removed the Indian and kept the land. I mean, talk about an insightful way of looking at this. I mean, I'm sure they thought, Cyrus, what's your take on this? I mean, they probably thought they were scoring a victory for modern sensibilities.
Yeah, you know, civilians are being killed all over the world. Babies are still being aborted. But hey, at least we are culturally appropriate on our sticks of butter.
Yeah. But yeah, I get it. But the funny thing is not that this is a funny topic per se, but what's funny is, in a not so funny kind of way, you know, the whole history of Native Americans in this country is their land was taken from them. And the land was kept, and they were removed from their land. And that's what happened on the Lando Lakes butter box. As this guy points out, he says they literally removed the Indian and kept the land.
It's very funny.
I think so, too.
It's very dark, but it's very funny.
That is dark humor, yeah. But, man, we have some audio. I want to get to that as well. What do we have? Jen Psaki circling back to... Oh, she's defending the insanity that's going on in some of these schoolrooms. Remember I talked to you about the new Florida bill that just passed, by the way, and its detractors, they're calling it the Don't Say Gay bill. It has nothing to do with that. It just says that it's not age appropriate to teach pre-K kids up to the age of third grade about gender ideology. It's not the time, not the place, and all the gay people and all the gay cheerleader people, they're outraged that
gay.
Oh, you know who said that?
Gay, gay. Yeah, yeah. The guy who plays my favorite hero.
Yeah.
Yes.
You had to. You hesitated there.
Well,
why don't you read his post? This is Mark Hamill.
I just read it.
Well, you didn't read all of it.
Oh, yeah.
This is Mark Hamill. I don't know if we have enough time for you to read the whole post. Read it.
He says gay like 37 times. Yeah. That's the post.
Gay, 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 yep. gay. And that's then there's it. A rainbow flag at the end.
Oh, yeah. I forgot the rainbow flag.
Yeah. So did you read my comment about that post that he posted?
I did. I don't have it. What did you say again?
I said the force is not strong with this one.
Yeah, it's not.
No. So let's hear from Jen Psaki circling back. She's livid that parents would say, I don't want my kid 4 years old, 5 years old, learning about deviant sexuality. She hates that stuff. So here's her circling back to that issue.
Thanks, Jen. I have two questions. First, about the Florida bill that just passed, restricting the speaking about of homosexuality yeah. and gender identity up to third grade. And then I have a question about surveillance matters that have been in the news. Regarding the Florida bill, in 1994, when many of us in this room were in school, President Biden actually voted for a much broader restriction that banned federal funds from being used for, quote, the promotion of homosexuality as a positive lifestyle alternative. Why did he do that, and can you describe how his thinking has evolved over the years?
Well, I think that you have seen the president speak passionately about his view that a bill like this, a bill that would discriminate against families, against kids, put these kids in a position of not getting the support they need at a time where that's exactly what they need, is discriminatory. It's a form of bullying. It is horrific. I mean, the president has spoken to that. In terms of his views and comments from 25 years ago, I think the most important question now is, why are Florida leaders deciding they need to discriminate against kids who are members of the LGBTQI community? What prompts them to do that? Is it meanness? Is it wanting to make kids have more difficult times in school in their communities? I would pose that question to them, and we can talk about it more tomorrow if you get an answer.
It's none of those things, Jen. I hate to break it to you, Jen.
I was just thinking with the Mark Hamill thing, Luke Skywalker in The Last Jedi says, congratulations, every word you just said was wrong.
Well, you notice what she does there. So here again, whoever the reporter was did some digging and found out that Joe Biden back in the day that he opposed, this kind of thing. And, you know, so you notice how he says it, you know, how do you account for how his thoughts have evolved on this issue? And she just sidesteps that.
Like, I'm sorry to break it to you, Chad.
Exactly. That's kind of what she was trying to say. But in any case, no, it has nothing to do with mean-spiritedness. It has nothing to do with any of the other epithets that she just raised. You know what it has to do with, Jen Psaki? It has to do with parental authority and parental rights to determine whether or not a 4 or 5, 6-year-old child is going to be helped or harmed by hearing about things in the classroom that are sexual in nature. It's age inappropriate. People go to jail, by the way, for grooming children. Now, the legal definition of grooming, I know this only because I've had to do some research on it to find out what is the legal definition of grooming. It is that you are establishing an emotional bond or connection or influence with a child so that you can sexually assault that child. So the intention may not be there in the case of the teacher. He or she may not intend to have sexual contact with the child, but everything else up to that point is grooming. What these people are doing in the classrooms, that's exactly what it is. And that's why they're so outraged and so furious when you bring this up to them. Because they absolutely don't want to see the parallel between the two. When you take a little 4, 5, 6-year-old child and you start introducing them into subjects, topics, realities that they are far from being prepared to handle, their bodies haven't started changing yet. They don't even think about these things. They don't even know about these things unless they live in a bad home. But other than that, they don't know about these things, and they're trying to rip away their innocence. And that's exactly what they're doing. And this is why this new law in Florida is a big step in the right direction. And you can judge just how big of a step in the right direction it is by how vitriolic and ferocious and infuriated the response is from the people like you just heard from.
Absolutely correct. I couldn't agree with you more on any of that. I don't want, and the people are like, well, they want to keep this lifestyle. They need to focus on the age group that this bill is geared towards.
They're there to learn how to count numbers.
Let's learn our colors.
Know their colors. How to learn the alphabet.
Get the alphabet. Yep.
That's what they're there to learn. They're not there to learn how to put on a condom. 4-year-olds do not need to know how to put on a condom or why anybody would put on a condom.
And a woman.
And that's the least of the terrible things that they talk to these kids about.
Yeah, and speaking of grooming, we have audio of what I don't. You sent this to me, and it's like a pledge of allegiance, but it's a.
Oh yeah, okay. This is okay. So you wouldn't know it to hear this, but if you want to see it, our what is his job? Secretary of Transportation, Pete Buttigieg. Okay. Right. And, you know, his calling card is, hi, I'm Pete Buttigieg. I'm gay. That's his calling card. Hi, I'm Pete Buttigieg. I can't get the words out. I'm Pete Buttigieg. I'm married to a man. I mean, he leads with that, you know, Mr. Gay married man kind of thing. So this is his husband. Now, we're speaking strictly legally here in terms of what the law says. And I believe he would pronounce his name Chasten, C-H-A-S-T-E-N. Apparently he's a teacher, or he's with a group of what appear to be about 30 to 40 children, and they all seem to be maybe 12 and under, and he's leading them in a kind of a mock pledge of allegiance, but it's all about LGBTQ, and he has a big rainbow flag.
If I saw this in a movie, I'd be like, come on, that's just ridiculous. This isn't real. I mean, that's too far.
Like, I hate to break it to you, Cyrus, but this is real. And so he's leading them. You'll hear it. He's leading them in this kind of mock pledge of allegiance. And then when it's all over, he sort of waves the flag over their heads, I guess, to bless them or something like that. And he's really happy about this. Let's listen.
All right. I pledge my heart.
I pledge my heart.
To the rainbow.
To the rainbow.
Of the not-so-typical gay camp.
Of the not-so-typical gay camp.
One camp.
One man,
full of pride,
full of pride,
indivisible,
indivisible,
with affirmation and equal rights for all.
With affirmation and equal rights for all.
Watch your heads.
Watch your heads.
Well, that's because he's flying the. They're in a basement.
And it's a kids' camp, right? It's like a.
I guess.
Like a rainbow camp. What would you call it?
I guess a rainbow camp. I don't know. I'm not sending my kids there.
Where's the tolerance for me and you? Where is the, you know, the affirmation? What does he say? Affirmation and acceptance at the end? Can you play the very end of it? I want to hear it again.
Yeah.
Full of pride.
Full of pride.
Indivisible.
Indivisible.
With affirmation and equal rights for all.
With affirmation and equal rights for all.
Watch your head.
Where's the affirmation for the parents who don't want their kids to learn these things? Where's the equal rights for these parents? To say, I have a right to determine what my child is going to learn in school, and I don't want my child learning that in school. Certainly not in pre-K or first grade. So this is just a further illustration of, you know, equal rights for some and not for others. Tolerance for some and not for others. No tolerance for you. I'm sorry. If you believe in traditional marriage, absolutely no tolerance for you. Judgment, no judgment for me, but judgment for you. If you believe in, say, traditional marriage. So it's another example of the out of control hypocrisy. They don't even try to hide it. It's just so blatant. And I shouldn't say nobody. Not enough people are really standing up to it. So I'm happy to see that the state of Florida has taken a stand against this. And I have a feeling that in due time, it's just going to keep pushing like a tsunami. And we'll see what happens. But I wanted to bring that to your attention, given the fact that this is so recently in the news. Let's take a break. We'll come right back to your phone calls. The number is 888-914-9149. I hate to break it to you, Cyrus, but we got to take a break. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
The CDC is now recommending that you wear a face mask over your eyes when pumping gas to prevent heart attacks. Haha, just kidding. They didn't really say that. But they might as well. What is gas now? $40 a gallon or something like that? It's going through the roof.
And some of the rules have been so ridiculous. That's like, I believed you for a second.
Let me say it again in my best news announcer voice. The CDC is now recommending you wear a face mask over your eyes when pumping gas to prevent heart attacks.
That's good.
You know what, though? If the CDC did say wear a mask over your eyes, there would be people who would do it. Follow the science. They would say it. You know it.
Follow the science.
Yeah. But this is just a joke. Okay. And anyway, let's go to Mary Beth in Chicago. Good morning, Mary Beth.
Hi. How are you?
I am well, thank you.
Are you there? Oh, sorry.
I'm here.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, I've been reading about things all Catholic, one of them being praying for those who have passed on. In looking at Fatima, she said, pray for the poor sinners, those who have no one to pray for them. However, I've also read that, you know, if we pray for people that have gone to hell, it's pointless because they've already been, their fate has been sealed. Mm-hmm. But we, as lay people, we don't know who's in purgatory and who's in hell. So how do we know, like, who to pray for and who not to pray for? Or should we just pray for everyone? Because I've been doing prayer masses for people.
Oh, that's great. Well, the rule of thumb is you pray for the souls of the faithful departed. So that would be the first, you might say, the first category, people that you know, relatives, loved ones, people you hear about in the news, etc. You pray for them. And if those people went to hell, then your prayers are not wasted. They're applied by the Lord to those who need them in purgatory. And you'll find out in heaven who those people were, and they'll thank you for it. But if they are in purgatory, then your prayers do assist them. And if they're already in heaven, they don't need your prayers because they're in heaven. So God applies your prayers to those who are still in purgatory. So you can rest assured that even though you don't know who is in which place, God sorts all that out and he applies your prayers accordingly.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
And can I just say one thing about the caller that called about abortion?
Sure.
I had heard years ago on the radio, I think I was listening to NPR, and they had a segment on infanticide with the Romans, and they believed that a child wasn't a child until they cut the first tooth. Mm-hmm. So a lot of this is just, in my opinion, swayed by what's the popular belief today, and none of us would be here unless we went through that quote-unquote parasitic stage. I mean, when that egg and sperm meet, we all had to go through that stage.
Right.
And the trust of a human being to carry us through.
Yeah. Yeah, in other words, another way to put what you just said, Mary Beth, is, you know, thank God that your mom chose life instead of abortion.
Yes.
Otherwise, we wouldn't be here, would we?
Yeah, and now today it's what fits our needs, right? And it's like, no, we all have a right to be here once that egg and sperm meet by the grace of God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we live in a culture now where people are conditioned to believe in the worth of another person, that it extends only up to the point where that person is convenient. And if that person becomes inconvenient or doesn't provide entertainment or is not a profit center in some way, many people now, they view that other person as not really worth it. You know, and if you get in my way or if you... Yeah, if you're inconvenient to me in some way, then, you know, you got to go. And look at it this way too, Mary Beth. I mean, pornography is an ugly topic to talk about, but there is a tie in here. And that is, thank you, Hugh Hefner, since the rise of, you know, publicly accessible pornography, and now it's everywhere, obviously. For the last, what's it been, 50, 60 years now, people who have been marinating in pornography, and our culture has been marinating in it, let's face it. It's a way of teaching people to look at other human beings, typically women, but not just women, men, children as well, to look at them as objects that are useful for our pleasure. And if the person is seen only as an object useful for pleasure, it has an effect on somebody's psyche over time. So if you combine that attitude in terms of the general prevalence of pornography, and then the general prevalence of people saying, well, you know, if you're inconvenient as a baby in the womb, then it's okay to get rid of you. It's okay to abort you or terminate. They use all sorts of euphemisms. That's another example where we see this dehumanization of people through the court case Roe versus Wade that has led to now this entrenched mentality that, yeah, yeah, my life is more important than yours and my convenience is more important than your life. And if you become inconvenient to me, then I can get rid of you if that's what I need to do. So this is a kind of a doubly toxic brew that we've been marinating in, I think. What do you think?
And we're doing that to our elderly, too. I keep seeing articles where this loving couple, the wife was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, so the husband lovingly helped her take her own life. I mean, what is going on? This is like crazy, but mainstream media is smoothing it out and making it look glamorous all around. And I just feel, thank God for you and your show, because we don't have enough voices out there explaining this to people to wake them up.
Thanks, Mary Beth. Well, one thing is for sure, that Relevant Radio is in just the right place at just the right time. We can thank God for that. And here's the other thing, Mary Beth, I'll leave you with this thought. A big part of what I do on the program every day is to try to help my listeners, to help you know how to do what you hear me do on the radio. So it's one thing for me to speak to one person. Perhaps I might have some hope of influencing somebody. But if we can get tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of people just like you who have been learning how to do this, then we have what's called a force multiplier, because then you're in a position to take the things that you learn here on Relevant Radio and apply them to the people that you meet. And then we can really begin to change the tide in a direction of hope and encouragement. Mary Beth, thank you. Great talking to you. Let's go to Andrew now in Salt Lake City. Hi, Andrew.
Hi. My question is my wife, my kids and myself, we are all practicing Catholics, but my mother is a Mormon, and she keeps putting our name in the Mormon temple, and I just don't know, in putting it in the Mormon temple to pray for us, I think, and I just don't know how I feel about that.
Well, I could understand that she's doing it in a misguided sense of love. The thing to remember is that in the Mormon Church, now they will insist that they should be called by their official title, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but that, you know, it's not incumbent upon us to do that. Mormons is how most people know them. But the thing to remember is that in the Mormon temple ordinances, such as proxy baptism, for example, they are themselves baptized, those Mormons who do have a temple recommend and go and perform these ordinances. They have themselves baptized on behalf of the dead. Now, this is not the question that you asked, but I'd like to extend your question into this area. But it can only be done, at least according to Mormon belief, for those who have already died. So your mother-in-law, in her misguided love for you and your family, she's seeking to have the people praying for you that you would see the light and become Mormon. But another thing to be aware of is the Mormon emphasis on genealogies. Now, they do this for a reason, because they believe that if they have all of the genial, or as many as possible of the genealogical records of all peoples who, you know, were not Mormon, so Catholics and others, they have the names and they know when they died. And so then the Mormons will go into the temples and they will have themselves baptized on behalf of these people who have died. And their belief is that then they'll have an opportunity to accept the gospel of Mormonism. They call it the restored gospel in the afterlife, and that they will be able to continue on and go to exaltation, to go to godhood. None of this is true, of course, but just be aware that this is a bigger part of the picture. In addition to your mother-in-law praying for you, no doubt your family genealogical history is in the database, and there's nothing you can do about it. I'm in there, you know, we're all in there, I'm sure. But just be aware that the bigger picture is the proxy ordinances, baptism, endowments, etc., so that in the afterlife they believe that you'll have a chance to become a Mormon. So that's what that's all about. If it's not something that's really bothering you, or is it something that's really bothering you? Is she making kind of a big deal about this?
Well, she every chance she gets, she lets me know that she's doing it. And my big concern is I'm welcoming of all prayers from all faiths. I guess, but when it goes into a temple, you know, with the spiritual warfare you know, and I don't know exactly what they believe, and I don't know, I don't know what their intent is. So it does make me a little bit uncomfortable. But again, you know, it is my mother, and I don't want to disrespect her in any kind of way. But if there's something that I don't want that energy, if it's negative, to be on my family. You know, we believe in the Catholic faith, one true God.
And that was your wife raised Mormon?
Yes, my wife was raised Catholic.
Raised Catholic?
Yes, yeah, she's.
But her mother is LDS. So her mother became a Mormon some point?
No, my mother is LDS.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was your mother-in-law. My mistake.
No, you're fine. No, it's my mother. My wife is a cradle Catholic. My kids are cradle Catholic, and I converted.
Got it. Okay, got it.
Yes.
So you already know about the Mormon Church's teaching on these issues if you were raised Mormon.
I left the church too early to realize realize what was going on. So I don't know a lot of the background. So
here's my advice, Andrew. I have to take a break in a minute. So if you have a pen handy, I'd encourage you to jot this down, or just open it up on your phone if you want to. Go to relevantradio.com/Patrick. relevantradio.com/Patrick. And there on the upper left, just below where it says The Patrick Madrid Show, you'll see About, Links, and Contact. Click on Links. And then in the Links section, click on Articles. And that'll take you to a page where maybe about 36 of my articles over the years have been posted. This is not all of them, but it's, you know, a representative selection. There are 4 or 5 in there that are on the differences between Catholics and Mormons. And they're denominated. So you'll see Mormonism in parentheses for the different ones. These are PDF documents. They're free. You can download it, print it out, whatever you want to do with it, do that. But I would encourage you to do this because I get into what is it that you as a Catholic need to know, and your wife certainly, and your mom for that matter. What is it you need to know about the distinctives about what we as Catholics believe about God and heaven, and what we're supposed to do in this life compared to what Mormons believe. So this is good, I think, for anybody who has an interest in the topic.
Where am I supposed to get it?
Well, you want to get it by going to, good question. You want to get it by going to relevantradio.com/Patrick. Click on Links, and then inside that box, click on Articles, and it's all right there. It's waiting for you, and it's all free, Andrew. So my suggestion would be to start there, start reading on that stuff, and then maybe call me back in a couple of weeks and we can sort through whatever other questions you have. But as far as your mom praying for you, I wouldn't let that bother you a bit. Just let her keep praying. You let her know that you're praying for her. I'll be right back.